We know we're living in tumultuous times. Public health pandemic, the emergence of a global anti-racism movement, each forcing a reassessment of old ways and attitudes. And while statues of slave traders are falling in Europe and Confederate flags will no longer be flown at the NASCAR races in the United States, yesterday I wanted to ask some questions about why the name King Leopold II still remains on the ranges in the West Kimberley. And as I explained yesterday, this Belgian monarch has no connection to this place, other than the fact that Alexander Forrest wanted to pay tribute to him as an explorer. King Leopold in real life oversaw the enslavement and deaths of perhaps millions of Congolese during and after his reign. He actually declared the Congo Free State to be his personal possession, and he made a huge fortune out of ivory and then rubber. And in fact, it was Stanley, he of Stanley and Dr. Livingstone, who became Leopold's man in Africa, convincing chiefs to sign away their right to their lands, and as a result, village populations were forced into labour to the point of starvation and death, and the cutting off of hands and feet and ears was a punishment for rebellion or poor productivity, and we're talking children too. So how does this man's name still exist in this land, owned by Aboriginal peoples of three major language groups? Well, last night on Twitter, I asked if the time had surely come to remove him. Ben White is the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
Is the state government going to remove King Leopold's name from that West Kimberley range?
Yes. You're quite correct. It is odd that we have in the Kimberley a very large site, actually. It's nearly 600 kilometres long. Range is named after King Leopold. You've quite already outlined the fact he was a nasty piece of work, and we have this odd historical artefact still with us around why it was named after King Leopold. For various reasons, though, the name still is there. Governments have been keen to change this for a long time now, and I guess if I could summarise why it hasn't been changed, it's really simply because it's been, the best of my understanding, it's really been caught up in various native title agreements over time that have provided for a process to rename that haven't eventuated. And that's really because of the size of it, as I said, nearly 600 kilometres long, it covers a number of different native title areas. So there's not one traditional name for that vast area. There's a number. And so we're just in the process now of understanding what they are, but actually it's in my capacity as Lands Minister that I can get on and rename that fairly quickly once I've got a consensus from the two main groups up there.
Okay, so the name goes, and I wonder to what extent is it a reassessment brought on by so many questions being asked about so many statues and monuments and names around the world at the moment?
Obviously it's been elevated by that very discussion and those activities around the world, but this is something that Western Australia and more broadly Australia's been doing in various forms over the last probably a decade or two. We've certainly been looking at a range of different areas around WA, and there are lots, Jeff, named either after individuals, explorers or people who funded their various expeditions, or just because they describe how somebody felt when they hit a certain area. For example, they felt disappointed, and therefore disappointment appeared in the names of different things. So we've been going through for a while now with local governments and native title groups about trying to rename and getting an understanding of what would be more appropriate names. And
how significant, though, Minister, is it this week when in the Belgian city of Antwerp they pulled down a statue of King Leopold?
Well, very significant, I think, and it highlights the absurdity that here in Western Australia we still have such a, it is an extraordinary range or number of ranges over such a large area of the Kimberley named after somebody that clearly the Belgians don't have a lot of, kind sentiment to themselves. So I'm keen to do this soon, Jeff. I think it's been delayed for a number of reasons, but I think it's time for that delay is up. And as soon as I just get some confirmation from different couple of different groups in the Kimberley will get on and rename that.
You're listening to Ben White, the Aboriginal Affairs Minister and the Lands Minister, confirming that the name King Leopold will disappear from the West Kimberley range as soon as able. Now, I do understand the question of what the ranges might be called is absolutely problematic and a question of greater complexity, isn't it?
It is, and I'll give you one example. So within the range themselves is very large. The conservation park within it is smaller. It's about 30% of the King Leopold ranges, and that is covered by Bunuba and Willingen native title determined areas. So that has been renamed, that conservation park, Milawindi. Now that's a Bunuba name, but for the broader ranges, which is much larger than the conservation park, we need to get that right, because ultimately I don't want to come out and rename something that has then immediate hostility from a particular important traditional owner group. So I just do need to make sure that there is a consensus around what the name will look like.
And now I know these are, as I said in my introduction, complex times and challenging times, and we don't know the extent to which this movement represents fundamental change, whether it fades, whether people push back against aspects of it. That is all to be determined by time. But there are, of course, other questions in this state, like Piccaninny Creek. What of its future?
Yeah, and again, another site in the East Kimberley. Piccaninny and some of these other words that came out of a time that treated Aboriginal people much less respect than they do now. They're everywhere, Jeff, and this is the issue. Black Boy Park in, I think, Joondalup, from memory. They're everywhere. Local councils need to do a fair bit of work, particularly around some of these local parks and creeks, but conservation estates that are in the hands of the Environment Minister, I think, are perhaps easier because they will be in a location that tends to have one traditional owner group that will have that's fairly easy to find a traditional name, so renaming isn't that big a task. Again, it's the ones that I find more difficult that tend to get a lot of local comment, either for or against, or where they're named after particular explorers, as opposed to terms about groups of people like Piccaninny being, you know, obviously an Aboriginal kid.
Do these things have to change?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think it does. A couple of reasons why we want to change is because WA has, because that nature, that history of Dutch bumping into it for a while, well before Stirling arrived, and French bumping into it before Stirling arrived, then of course the English, and a lot of sites like Peel named after various property speculators, and then as explorers in the frontier made its way north, as Alexander Forrest did after people they admired at a distance, we end up with this state that has an extraordinary and deep and rich cultural history of Aboriginal history, named after a broad range of European people, the vast majority of whom never came to Western Australia during their lifetimes. This is the result. And if you go around anywhere in the world, you'll see places that had that colonial impact. It's not unusual, and many places are well advanced in renaming. We're getting there, but there are a lot of locations that might have a dual name, but in this respect of King Leopold, I suspect there's no one's particularly interested in having a dual name with someone who was clearly an evil tyrant.
Some people get very concerned about these issues. A lot of people will not like to hear that the statue of James Stirling in the city today was defaced. I think the collar of his uniform and his wrists were painted red. Aboriginal flag was painted at the base of the statue. Some people will take offence at that. Other people will say, well, that's what happens. That's the consequence of who he was and the massacre at Pinjarra. How do you assess that? Because it's very hard to be in government, I would think, and condone or endorse that which is seen as illegal.
Well, I don't. And that vandalism is something, whether it doesn't matter what form it takes, Jeff, I don't condone. And in fact, it just intends to make people angry, knowing full well there'll be public money spent on repairing whatever's been vandalised. But the broader points around, we have along the terrace a range of statues of different people, no Aboriginal people of interest, interestingly enough. So these points of history like the Pinjarra massacre and those significant, I guess, if you like, where Western Australians are involved with that I don't think broadly Western Australians know. So I think there's ways we can go about elevating the history and roles that people played in a perhaps more sophisticated way than simply vandalising them, Jeff, because what I tend to find is that just simply shuts off people willing to perhaps take a different historical perspective.
It does. In some ways, I think King Leopold is an easy target when it's explained to people who he was and what he was about. Just confirming, King Leopold's days in WA are over?
King Leopold, I don't want to be looking at a map and seeing that name in part of Western Australia that is so special and such an asset to the globe. King Leopold doesn't deserve it.
Thank you for speaking to me today.
Thanks, Jeff.